Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land to Grantee University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 10th day of June, USDA report day. The WASDE numbers were released earlier today. In a moment, we'll talk with Daryl Good, ag economist at U of I, and recount those numbers. And then Jackie Vakes will look into them with some analysis. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll close out the half hour by taking a quick look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, we'll talk with the folks over at the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's the ethanol plant located not too far outside of Logansport, Indiana, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us and all the numbers from USDA this morning on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. From the CME Group in Chicago, the numbers finished lower for the day. In the corn pit, down 7 3/4 of a cent for the July contract, 357 1/4. The settlement price, September down 8 1/4. December down 7 3/4. It finished at 375 1/4. The March down 7 1/2 at 386 1/2. And next year's July corn down 7 3/4 of a cent. Final price there, $4 even. Soy complex, July beans 949 1/2 down 2. August at 934. 4 3/4, 2 1/4 lower, and the September soybeans, $9.23 1/2 down 2 3/4, November, $9.21 3/4 down 3 1/4, and next year's January down 2 3/4 at $9.29, July of next year at $9.41 1/4, in the bean pit down 3 3/4, soybean meal finished $2.10 lower, and the bean oil 6 cents lower for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the July contract down 18 3/4 of a cent, a settlement price at $5.13 1/2. The July hard red 17 3/4 settled at $5.30 1/2 per bushel. Live cattle futures at the CME Group up $2.72 1/2 in the August at $226.95. They're still trading, of course, live cattle, or rather those are the feeders. The live cattle in the June 75 cents higher at $155.82 1/2 on the last tick, and lean hogs on their last tick down 7 1/2 cents in the July at $79.90. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Checking now some of the outside markets. Crude oil is trading $61.26 a barrel. It's $1.12 higher. Ethanol futures down 3 9/10 cents at $1.51 3/10 cents. The RBOB price of gasoline at $2.14 3/10 cents per gallon is up 6 6/10 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.94 4/10, 2 6/10 cents higher. And natural gas on the day, 4 cents higher at $2.88 6/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 257 points at this hour, 18,024. The dollar index is unchanged at 95, and New York gold up $9 at $1,186.50 per troy ounce. Let's check the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We're on our way to 93 degrees under mostly sunny skies this afternoon. We have a slight chance of showers, 20%, and then tonight a 40% chance of rainfall. Mostly cloudy by then, 69 degrees for the low, and Thursday a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Partly sunny, a high of 90, southwest winds at 6 to 10, and Thursday night a 30% chance of rainfall, cloudy, and a low of 71 degrees, south winds at 8 to 10 miles an hour. Friday, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Mostly cloudy, will climb to a high of 88 degrees on a breezy sky with south-southwest winds at 13 to 20. They'll gust all the way to 25 on Friday. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It is a Wednesday afternoon. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Daryl Good joins us in studio to take up this morning's WASDE numbers. Daryl, can you walk us through what the report showed us and then maybe even talk a little bit, if you can, about the crop production number for wheat, though that really didn't have a lot to say this morning.
Yeah, for corn, USDA, for the current marketing year, lowered their projection of corn used for ethanol by 25 million bushels. I think that was a bit of a surprise to the market, and USDA cited their new grain crushing survey that they instituted last fall, showing that corn being consumed for ethanol is not as large as previously forecast, suggesting that that the efficiency of ethanol production has, in fact, increased somewhat. So we kind of have this situation where ethanol production is up about 4% year over year, but USDA projecting a 1% increase in corn use for ethanol production because of the new survey data. So that did raise the projection of year-ending stocks by 25 million bushels, which is what the market expected, but they were looking for a lower feed and residual number, not a lower ethanol number. For soybeans, USDA raised their projection of current marketing year exports and crush by 10 million bushels each and lowered the projection of year-ending stocks by 20 million bushels. So that's now down to 330 million bushels. Just for perspective, last fall that projection was 475 million bushels. So soybean consumption has turned out to be quite a bit larger than expected this year. So really didn't change the overall balance sheet very much. Not a game changer in my mind. I think the market is still expecting that USDA may lower its projection of feed and residual use of corn once we see the June stocks number. And that's being based on the bird flu and the loss of some of the layer flock. That shoe is yet to fall. When we see the June 1 stocks estimate, we'll be able to calculate total feed and residual use for the past quarter, and are we on track for the USDA projection or not.
Do you think that that number, the feed number in the grain stocks, will be impacted very much by the number of birds? That the last calculation I saw was somewhere in the 44 million birds had been euthanized, and it depends about on the number of birds that are gone and how long really they're gone, I suppose, more than anything else.
That's right, and I think that's an excellent point, is that how quickly is that laying flock repopulated is extremely important. The other thing we have to consider is what's happening in the other sectors of livestock production. We know that hog production is up sharply year over year. Broiler placements continue to run 3-4% higher than last year. So we have to kind of counterbalance what may be happening in the layer sector with what's happening in the other sectors. And then you always come back to this kind of the hedging statement that it's a feed and residual category. So you can get maybe carried away too much with the detail of trying to calculate how much corn should we be feeding when in fact the residual variance can be larger than any changes in actual feed consumption. And that's why we always have to see the stocks report and then calculate backwards what was feed and residual use for the year. So, you know, that's why we see surprises in the numbers. People calculate kind of what they think feed use should be, and then the stocks number doesn't always verify that because of this kind of noisy category of residual use.
And you did some work a few years ago taking a look at that. In fact, it is pretty noisy.
It is pretty noisy, and the June report in particular in recent years has had some big surprises, so that may happen again this year. We just never know the direction of the surprise, and so the market kind of has to be aware of that. But at this juncture, I think the market is thinking that the feed demand has been a little weaker than what the USDA projected.
The other USDA report due at the end of the month is the acreage number. John Newton this week put together some maps based off the crop progress reports showing that about 18 million acres of soybeans had yet to be planted. You had warned, maybe three weeks ago, that Kansas was behind, and it looked like it was going to stay behind. In fact, it's Kansas and Missouri and that southwest, south-central district of Iowa that is behind in soybean planting.
It really is. I mean, as of the first week of June, there was still 70% of the crop in those two states yet to be planted. And I don't think the weather has been very favorable since then, and certainly late this week into next week supposed to continue to be wet. So the June acreage report will be interesting this year because I think particularly for those two states and perhaps for more states, because it will in fact still reflect some intentions for planting for those acres that were not planted as of survey time. So how will producers report those intentions? Are they still planning to plant all the soybean acres if it dries out, or have they already made decision to abandon and go to prevent plant? So even after we see the June number, I think there's going to continue to be some uncertainty about where acreage will actually come in. And so beginning in August, September, we'll start watching the FSA prevent plant acreage report to see if we can tweak the June number.
What's enough prevent plant to really make a difference? So if there's 18 million there of that, what would make a swing difference?
Yeah, you start with the March intentions number, and what assumption do you make about intentions? Were there any prevent plant acres reported in those intentions? You assume not. So presumably the March report accounts for all the acres. And so if you have 2, 3, 4 million acres of prevent plant that draws down that total, and it's all in one crop, if it's all in soybeans, for example, then that certainly is very significant. But you have other factors going on as well in terms of March intentions and the June number. There's always differences between those two. The procedure, the methodology for making those estimates is slightly different. There's sampling error involved in putting together those estimates. So it's kind of like feed use of corn. You do your homework and you say, how many acres do you think will be prevent planted? How should acreage change from March intentions? But you forget all these other factors that can influence that change as well. So, but if we see, 3, 4, 5 million acres prevent plant, that should change the balance quite a bit.
Thank you, Darrell.
My pleasure.
Darrell Good, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. Now let's turn to the trade reaction to this morning's USDA report. To take that in, we're joined by Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. At first blush, what did you see in the numbers, Jackie?
Well, I'm not too shocked, to be absolutely honest. At the U.S. numbers, corn came in just a little bit higher than the average guess. Beans came in actually a little lower than the average guess. And wheat was just pretty much unchanged. It's the world numbers that were interesting. When you looked at the fact that, they bumped the 14-15 numbers higher. So instead of 192.5 million carryout like we had last month for 14-15, we came in with 197 million, excuse me. And so that gave us a 4 million metric ton increase in the global world stocks. And so, that was surprising. And most of that came out of Brazil and Argentina. At the world level on beans, too, there was another surprise. We actually dropped, and basically dropped primarily because of the fact that they say that the crush was a lot better than they anticipated it had been. And so all the adjustments are coming out of 14-15 and, of course, ultimately impacting 16. So when you saw 16 actually dropped by 3 million metric tons. Now let's put things in perspective, okay? In 15, the world carryout was 83.7 million metric tons. Now they're projecting 93.22. So we can't fool ourselves into thinking there isn't more beans in the world, but it is lower than what they originally had said. And at the world level, wheat stocks actually fell, slightly. And so, in general, I don't think they gave the bulls an awful lot to chew on when it came to the wheat. And you can see that in the reactions that we've seen shortly after the report today. And I think, we'll probably end up the day weaker. But it's just a situation where the June report tends to be eclipsed by the reports that are going to come out at the end of the month. And the one thing that stuck out at the world level is they did raise the Brazilian bean, the Argentine bean crop, but they did not raise the Brazilian bean crop. And Safras came out this morning and bumped it another million metric tons back up to the original 95.5 that we had seen early on. And so if that does come in, then that just adds back to the world-ending stocks. But in general, the June report is pretty blah. You know, we get through it, then we normally digest some of it. And today you'll see all the guesses that had been made ahead of time corrected by action in the market. And then tomorrow we'll probably see the real market reaction to what the actual report is. And then we'll be on to the acreage report and the grain stocks report.
Anything change in your mind as to what you'd like to do with your client base, or are we still status quo with them?
Pretty much status quo. I'm not ready to say lift our puts at this stage of the game, or do anything of the thing. I am looking to be able to buy back when I lift puts. I'm definitely going to do some buying in the market to protect, especially in beans, any type of crop insurance prices that we've already captured. But who knows where we're going to go on this marketplace? It's tough. And then we look into next year, and you start to, we just saw the Brazilian harvest plan come out, Todd. And the Brazilian harvest plan would be similar to our farm bill, basically. And it doesn't hardly keep up with their inflation or any of their costs, which is really interesting. I thought our listeners might really like to know this. They have what they call a subsidized interest rate. But it depends upon how big a producer you are, and that covers, production costs as well as loans for equipment. And the subsidized interest rate, if you're a medium-sized producer, is 7.75% for production and 7.5% for equipment, where large producers, rather than getting a break like we hear so many times here, they're at 8.75% for production and a range of 7 to 8.75% for equipment. So, when you look at the whole picture, Dilma has been running around saying, oh, we gave this much more money to the farmer, this much more money to the farmer. The reality is, if you take inflation into account and everything else, and that the expected base interest rates are going to 14 to 16% from 10% last year, they actually came out with about 4% less than they would have had in the last 2 years. So it definitely favors bean production. There's no question about that. And if you remember back when I saw that Argentinian fellow at the USDA conference out in Washington, D.C., he gave a breakdown on how much money they make and what they do. So I took 25% times the March corn futures, which would leave them 97 cents a bushel, and 25% of the bean futures leaves them 232. Kind of a no-brainer, don't you think? More beans, And so on top of that, Mato Grosso is debating right now. They're talking about putting a 9% export tax on all soybeans and corn that actually leave their state. So this is going to be another 9% on top of the government's tax that they have. So the Brazilian government is in bad shape. They're not as bad as Argentina, but they're certainly drifting that direction. And so it looks as if the politicians, basically, Todd, are just looking to agriculture, their biggest commodity, to try and suck as much money out of them as they possibly can.
On the global front, are there things that you're watching that producers should be aware of? And I know usually there are, so you keep track of Greece pretty closely. And I'm wondering about China, and I'd like to stay with soybeans and maybe with corn, because in that nation on subsidies, they have a farm program as well. But for the corn, that farm program allows them to grow corn at a much higher price for sale, but it's stockpiled. Do you think that will end anytime soon?
I don't. And in fact, there's been a lot of talk that China has great concerns because the stockpile just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And, we had talked, I had actually expected, and maybe it will happen yet in 2015, they talked about migrating more to a program like we used to have for corn, and going away from the supports. I mean, they put these supports back in 2011 when prices were extremely high for a good reason. They don't want all the farmers migrating into the city, so they want to keep the farmer there in the countryside. But I don't think the government can continue to support that. And when you look at China, you know, they cut their growth this morning from 7.1% down to 7%, inflation from 2.2 down to 1.4. That doesn't say to me that they have a healthy situation going on here. So I think sooner than later, they're going to have to figure out a way to, you know, either do transition payments, do something to try and keep the farmer where they want him to be, and yet be able to take care of things. You know, the crush margins have really dropped dramatically in China too. And so they have a lot of issues that they have to deal with. There's just no two ways about it.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. This is Illinois Public Media. You can find all these numbers on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. It's a Wednesday afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's take a look now at the cash grain market. Pete Peterson is on the phone line. He's at the Andersons facility near Logansport, Indiana. That's Clymer's ethanol plant. Thanks for being with us, Pete. How's the ethanol plant running today?
Good. We've had a couple real good days as far as grain through the driveway. I think yesterday we dumped 278 trucks, so corn's starting to move again.
And why is that the case?
I think a little bit of everything. You know, with a lot of rains we've had recently, you know, guys have a lack of anything else they can be doing on the farm. And you know, one thing they want to get off their shoulders is a little bit of corn movement, I guess.
And so is that movement you expected, or is it newly priced corn?
A little bit of both, newly priced, and there's some just cash grain, but a lot of it's been newly priced. We had a pretty good push there for a while on basis levels. We had a push about 8 over. We've backed off since. Right now we're about 3 over, so put quite a bit on the books.
And then when you take a look at the soybean processors in the area, are they on the hunt for soybeans as well? There's some thought that maybe there aren't, maybe not as many soybeans out there as first expected.
Well, we're kind of in the middle of a triangle of three major processors here, and I think right now trade has been done at least 40 to 45 over recently at probably all three plants.
So they are on the hunt in that case, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. The expectations for basis on both corn and soybeans over the coming week?
You know, corn, like I said, with the movement and everything, I expect maybe get a little bit weaker unless some crazy event happens. But and beans, you know, I think they're going to continue to remain firm, you know, having to pop the bid whenever the grain movement just kind of slows down.
Crop looks good in the area?
It looks good. We've been hit over the last 3 or 4 days in our general draw area here, anywhere between 5 to 10 inches of rain in areas. A lot of it, at the minimum you see, is probably 3 inches, and a lot of holes that are underwater, and you know, the color of the grain is not the best.
Okay. Hey, and what are your bids for the day?
Let's see. Cash corn into Clymer's. Let's see. We're at 360. And let's see, Delphi, we're 353. And on the bean side, we're at 958.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That is Pete Peterson. He's with the Andersons Clymer's facility out of Logansport, Indiana. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. In a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Black Cow Day. Credit for the treat often goes to Frank Wisner of Cripple Creek, Colorado, who in 1893 was inspired to float a scoop of vanilla ice cream on top of his glass of root beer after glimpsing the illumination of snow on top of Cow Mountain outside his home. By the way, the drink is also known as a brown cow. On this day in agricultural history in 1869, frozen food was shipped long distance for the first time. Frozen Texas beef was shipped by steamship to New Orleans, frozen by refrigeration equipment invented by John Gorey. The meat was eventually served in hospitals, hotels, and restaurants. Success in the frozen beef market prompted food manufacturers to develop freezing methods of other types, culminating in Clarence Birdseye's flash freezing system that ultimately hit grocery cases in 1934. In 1952, Mylar was registered as a DuPont trademark. Mylar is a very strong polyester film that has gradually replaced cellophane. DuPont touted the polyester film's strength, heat resistance, and insulating properties. It is used as a food wrap in addition to many other non-food uses. And in 1985, in the most embarrassing moment category, Coca-Cola officials announced it was bringing back the old formula Coke to replace the new Coke nobody wanted. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.